Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Hey, welcome back to Growth Marketing Today. I know it's been a while since the last episode, which was published November 2018. If you missed that last episode, you might have known that I actually got married last year in the summer of 2018, and I'm still adjusting to being married and working. But I promise you, I am back, and I'm going to be releasing a Growth Marketing Today episode on a weekly basis from now on. So today's guest actually comes from a boss marketer that I had a pleasure of chatting with last year. Her name is Aisha Matos of the Demand Maven. She quit her job last year to go cold turkey and started Demand Maven, which partners with early stage SaaS companies to help build out their marketing engine and get them their first 100 customers. Prior to that, she was a director of marketing at Hull.io and also worked at the ABM company called Terminus. So much great learning in this episode. In this episode, you'll learn three things. First, how Aisha quit her full-time job and made $10,000 freelancing in the first 90 days. Second, Aisha's process to getting SaaS companies their first $100,000 monthly recurring revenue, the lean way. And third, things that Aisha looks out for on websites to increase their conversion rates. I don't want to hold you back any further. Let's listen in on this episode with Aisha. Hey everyone, I have here Aisha all the way. I believe you're based out of Atlanta, right?
I am.
I'm based out of Toronto. We're actually almost neighbors, so to speak. I am so excited to talk to you about your expertise, demand generation, Demand Maven. How are things with you right now, Aisha? How are things?
Everything is the speed of light, of course, as per usual, but it is amazing. And I would not trade this journey for anything. It's been awesome.
I can't wait to talk about your journey. You shared me your story on a post, and just so encouraging and exciting that what you did with, well, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to let you talk about it. Maybe talk a little bit about your career journey so far and how you got to where you are now with Demand Maven.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Woo. All right. So I started my career as a digital marketing manager for a IT consulting firm. Now they're actually much more of a full service agency, but that was about 6 years ago that I started. It's called Arc Systems. And at the time they were 100% focused on implementing websites for enterprise companies. And they worked with software like Sitecore and Oracle, Adobe, like the big platforms, but 90% of the work that they did was for Sitecore. And the average sales cycle was like 1 to 2 years long. Average deal size was 1 to 2 million. And I ran the marketing function there for about 4.5 years. I started out purely as content, and then over the years, it just grew into, well, can you handle events? Can you handle this? Can you handle this? And then ultimately, it was just, can you own all of marketing? And it's like, yes. but one thing I kind of realized pretty early on, and this was like around year three or year four, I realized that if the sales cycle is 1 to 2 years long, then that means that the marketing cycle is that plus however much extra time needed to, you know, win an audience, gain attention from your target market, etc. And I literally had a moment like where my life like flashed before my eyes, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's gonna take me like another 3 to 4 years to like really figure this out and like really hone in on what's actually working. And at the time I didn't really realize it, but my role was essentially sales enablement. I know we're gonna talk about this probably a little bit later, but account-based marketing as well. After ARC, I decided to experience the complete and total opposite world. Still software, still technology, but I went into startup world, and because I really wanted to work with product, and product was really where I was super passionate. But also because sales cycles are typically like 30 days, as opposed to 2 years, and I started working for Flip My Funnel, which is at the time it was its own business unit, and I don't know if it still is, but at the time it was, and it lived and breathed inside of Terminus. So So I got the startup experience and I also got the community experience as well. So I, we were part of Terminus. We're sharing the same space, but at the same exact time, I also got to work with tons of other startups as well, because Flip My Funnel runs conferences. They have a dedicated account-based marketing community, and I learned the ins and outs of startup world. And that was probably the biggest shift from selling to enterprise, long sales cycle, to very quick, very iterative, and moving at the speed of light. So I was there for about 6 or 7 months, and then I actually took an opportunity as head of marketing at Hull, which I'm like wearing their t-shirt right now. I guess no one will be able to see this, but head of marketing at Hull. So Hull gave me, I got my technical chops at Arc because it's all about website implementation. Lots of front end and even more back end. Hull was where I got my data integration chops. And this is where I really learned the underbelly of all of the data that a company can accumulate and all the different types of departments and what you're supposed to do with it and why it's such a pain in the butt to integrate any of it. So Hull is a data integration platform. You can also think of them as like a CDP, customer data platform. But they ultimately can come in and integrate pretty much end to end all of your data. And on top of that, roll it up into a singular customer profile. So think like Segment, but like way more powerful. This is where I learned, this is where the challenges that I faced were much more about true product, true marketing. Whereas with My Funnel, it was much more about like, how do we grow the community as fast and as big as possible? Yeah. While still maintaining like meaningful relationships. With Hull, it was much more about how do we make sure that we're building the right product? How do we make sure that we are making sure that the right people know about it? And how do we scale this? And then after we 10.5x'd in the year of, actually it was this year. So it was at the beginning of January, we 10.5x'd growth, which was amazing. Wow. And it was like complete and total sales, customer success, marketing, and product. Like everyone was all in. And after Hull, I was getting this itch even when I was at Arc, and it was to start something of my own. And I'm sure this is a very classic, typical story, but the more that I worked with founders, especially my previous manager, someone whom I think is probably hands down one of the best managers I've ever had. But the more that I worked with him and the more that I worked with just other people, even when I was at Flip My Funnel, I kind of realized like, I really want to start my own thing, but I just didn't have the courage or didn't really know what to do. So we were kind of at a place with Paul where I was like, wow, I wasn't there for very long. I was only there for like 7 months, but I gained so much information and knowledge that I thought, you know what, this actually might be the perfect time to start something. And I really wanted to work with founders like my previous manager. I really wanted to work with people like him. And I wanted to work with people that I had kind of met and been introduced to over the years of being in startup world. So the idea for Demand Maven came from feeling very passionate about founder life and wanting to help kind of be like the Sherpa or like the guide through what's very confusing, conflicting, and not very clear. And at the same exact time, give them something that's very proven. Ultimately, they want to grow their businesses. And it just so happened that I knew how to do that from a marketing perspective. So really, like, that's where it all kind of started.
That's so cool. I the article that you shared with me, talk about like just leaving your job without any clients, like really locked in. How did you get past that? I know there's a lot, like, just based on my conversation anecdotally, a lot of people have the feeling of wanting to start something, but they always have fear or something like a roadblock that prevents them from like tipping over. What was it that pushed you over the limit, and how did you overcome that fear of like, what's next?
I think the deep, dark, dirty secret is that the fear is kind of always there. But there's so much that happened that helped me to become much more fearless. And really, I think it was much more about feeling confident and feeling secure, and grounding yourself in that is really where you can overcome those fears, and also focusing on the possibilities. Honestly, like what really got me over the hump in the first, because the first like 2 to 3 months are both exciting, thrilling, and also terrifying. But what got me over the hump was just focusing on the possibilities and focusing on why I was doing this in the first place. In that post, how I quit my job and made 10K in 90 days. One of the things that I say is you have to focus on your why, and because that why is going to keep you going forever, and it's going to get you through like the really dark times. When I first started the company, I was considering other offers and other roles. I had two amazing opportunities on the table, both of which were so cool. And at the same time, I still kept getting the little whisper of of what Demand Maven was ultimately like going to be. And I couldn't ignore it. And at the same time, I knew it was going to be terrifying. But focusing on like why I did this in the first place, that's really where I say I've grounded myself. And in terms of like, I mean, I think even the most successful entrepreneurs and business owners, even now, even the most successful marketers, even now, they still get that fear. Like they still, things scare them still. And it's crazy because you think that after you've quote made it, that like you just don't get scared anymore, but it's not true.
Right. Well, for me personally, I use that fear to tell me that I'm going the right direction. Because if I'm too comfortable where I'm at, then I might have probably reached my limit or potential in that space. But a lot of people I find are let that fear block them. You started Demand Gen, Demand Maven. So maybe talk a little bit about Demand Maven. Like you said, you talked about your passion about founders. Like which kind of companies do you work with Demand Maven?
Yeah. So Demand Maven, it all started because my career has primarily been focused in demand gen and also in just revenue generating activities. And one of my passions is also just helping businesses grow. And that's part of the reason why I entered startups in the first place. So by combining marketing, but specifically revenue generating activities, and also combining this inherent need to help businesses grow, Demand Maven was born, but specifically to help early stage SaaS founders get to their first 100 customers or get to their first 100K MRR, depending on wherever you're at. And I find that typically the companies that I work with and the people that I work with, they are technical founders. They typically have very little experience in marketing, or they are second time founders or third time founders, and they are extremely comfortable outsourcing some of the work because they don't feel compelled to do it themselves necessarily. So those are two of my favorite people to work with, and they can have a seed round, maybe an angel investor, or they could be 100% bootstrapped. And I work with founders from all areas. And I will say I do primarily focus on B2B companies. B2C is so cool, but it's a slightly different ballgame. And I'm more classically trained as a B2B marketer. So that is, but apart from that, that's really my favorite people to work with.
Nice. So good. And you mentioned something there, which I found fascinating about your LinkedIn profile, is your headline says something about getting $100,000 in terms of marketing, monthly recurring revenue, the lean way. Like, I'm curious how, that's a really catchy headline. Congratulations. I'm curious what your process is when to help a founder get there, to get that milestone for their company.
Yeah. Typically, whenever I first start working with a founder, and they might have a very small team, they might have max like 7 employees. But usually, by the time that we talk, they know that they need marketing help. They know that it's going to be what gets them to the next level, but they're not quite either they're not really confident in what they're doing right this very second or like right now, or nothing's been done marketing wise and they can't hire a full-time marketer. So, and typically this is the conundrum of, I think, many bootstrapped founders. So especially if you're bootstrapped, you tend to not really always have all of the resources in the world. But at the same time, it doesn't make as much sense for you to have to go figure out all of marketing. And especially in startups and SaaS companies, SaaS marketers are some of the most sophisticated marketers in the world. And to expect a founder to have to all of a sudden just download all of this information, it's tough. It's a very tough position to be in. So where I can come in is through a very specific engagement, they can still get value out of it without having to necessarily like hire a full-time marketer, which could cost you six figures. Good. That said, what I typically start with is my number one first step, and this always makes everyone freak out, but it's always user research. And it's the step that is the least sexy step to everyone but marketers, because it makes the marketer's job infinitely easier. And it's also very much I say this to everyone all the time, but it's like we can either guess what your customers, prospects, whatever want, or we can just know. And the only way to know is by talking to them. This happens every now and again on Twitter, but like you'll see like a tweet storm of other like SaaS consultants, and it's always like, I had this conversation with a founder today and like his jaw hit the floor because I suggested user research and he was like, well, we talk to our customers all the time on intercom. And it's like, yeah, but do you actually ask them where they came from or like why they chose you? And that's typically something that never happens. So first step is always that. After that, depending on the user, and this also is kind of what blows people's minds, but it's really a simple concept. Based off of what the user wants, what the user thinks, feels, how they found you, why they chose you, that is ultimately what drives the acquisition strategy. That's what drives the marketing strategy. And this seems like a no-brainer, but it's actually shocking how many even very senior marketers don't go through this process. But from there, that is really what determines what kind of engagement we can like realistically pursue, whether that's through content creation, content marketing, more purely paid marketing or paid acquisition, if you will. And it's 100% based on paying customers. But that said, I will say SaaS companies do kind of fall into one of two buckets. Either you need more free trials or you need more demos. And the way that you get there, there are totally tactical ways we can get there. But we always verify it with user research.
Nice. No, that's so good. Almost every good marketer I've talked to always start off with user research. That's great that that's what you mentioned. Any particular questions that you ask, you talked about their problems and things like that. Is there any like particular questions that you need to ask for sure in the whole user research process?
Yeah. My favorite question right now is what is working really well about the product and what is not working really well about the product.
Interesting.
And no, it's very rare that people that you interview will tear your product to shreds. It's very rare. But the questions that they, or the answers that they give to that question, it usually is a series of doors that you can then open and clarify. And this is kind of where you understand several things. You understand where your product marketing opportunities lie, where your onboarding opportunities lie, and then also what content opportunities you have. Because even if someone has, we didn't really like this feature because like we don't really understand how to use it. But what is that feature about? That could inspire a whole set of blog posts for you to go write. And then at the same time, maybe something needs to be fixed with onboarding. So I love those two questions because they're so loaded. They're so loaded. And if you're really listening and if you're really, really, as long as you're hyper aware of the things that they say, you can dig a little bit deeper. You can ask clarifying questions and that will just give you even more insights. Those are my two favorites right now.
Nice. That's so good. There was one thing that I saw on your blog regarding like a website teardown of a website. You know, once you've done your user research, you ask them, hey, where can you improve things? What things do you look for in an effective demand generating website?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot, and there's a lot of really tactical things. And if you go to my website and you look at the website teardown, you'll absolutely see like just like the quick, like 8 or 7 things or however many I list of just like the concrete things, like what does the above the fold look like? What is the copy like? What's the design like? But the ultimate thing that I'm looking for, and this is the thing that is maybe a little bit less obvious in those teardowns, is I'm looking for the story that this website is trying to tell me. And I also, and there's really two stories. There's the story that the viewer is telling themselves about you, and then there's the story that you're actually telling. And a lot of marketers think that they're saying one thing, but the way that it's received is completely different. Or it's one-to-one in line and the website is like speaking to the viewer's soul and they're like, oh my gosh, I see myself in this. And from there they, you know, they book a demo or they sign up for a free trial or what have you.
Right.
And then it's not going to fit for everyone, but for the people that you want it to fit, that's ultimately what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that story and I'm looking to see, and I acknowledge my own bias whenever I look at a website, cause I'm not always the target audience. But I am looking for those key pieces of telling the right story and how much information are they able to give me to make a decision? It all plays into like the ultimate storytelling piece.
Nice. That's so good. So you want to make sure, every element of the website fits into one huge story that the brand is trying to tell.
Yeah. And I find that as companies get much more mature, they end up telling several different stories, which is completely legit. And it will be for different people. But I find if you're early stage, sticking to one story for one person is probably the best play.
Nice. I'm curious what your specialty is. You seem to be like Jane of all trades, so to speak. Like what would you say is your specialty? You can tear down websites, you can do user research, you can generate demand. So I'm curious what you would say your specialty with Demand Maven is.
Yeah. You know, I almost 100% of my career has been what I would call a multi-potentialist.
I like that. I'm going to use that.
Please. It's way better than generalist.
Right.
But I would say it's twofold into marketing strategy. So based off of what we've learned about the business and based off of what we've learned about our customers and where we want to go, what things do we need to place bets on and where do we foundationally need to start like actually building the marketing engine?
Right.
And then from there, my personal favorite thing to do is I love building campaigns. And the reason why I like it is because it can include many different pieces, and where I am not the subject matter expert, I can usually find someone to aid and guide in that. But as far as like designing the campaign, this could be through paid acquisition, paid media, or it could be through content. That's 9 times out of 10. Like I'm all about like the actual active part of acquisition, but more specifically marketing. There are some things that I would not say I am at all an expert in, but they are fun. So like onboarding, specifically onboarding emails, there are people out there who are way better at it than I am.
Right.
I mean, there's a number of things and I'm like, someone else can do that.
So true.
But I guess identifying that maybe that's a need, maybe that's a thing that we need to focus on, or like, this is the next big bet to place. So I would say I'm much more in that arena.
I'm curious of any memorable campaigns you've run. Like, wow, that's like what's your favorite campaign that you've run? And you don't have to say a particular client that you have, but like, it's something that really stuck with you. Like, oh, that was fun and cool.
Yeah. So most of my clients now are, they're kind of all like in the content they're all investing in inbound, which makes sense for every single one of them. And I think my favorite, I wouldn't even really call it a campaign, but probably it's a piece that I wrote, and it's for a company in the customer support space. They are all about communication and helping you like prioritize your communication between all of the different tools. So like you might have Jira, Slack, email, and you're getting all these support tickets and requests and communications from people, and you need to be able to prioritize that at scale. I got the opportunity to interview a really close friend of mine, and that interview I was so incredibly proud of, and the circulation that it got was very exciting. And I would not consider myself a customer support guru by any stretch of the imagination, but I am trained in journalism, and being able to pull his insights was so much fun. And I just get so excited whenever I get to do things like that. But yeah, that's the one that comes to mind.
That's super cool. That's it's awesome to be able to build content with one of your good colleagues. I'm curious. You talked about inbound marketing there. Another big thing that's happened recently is account-based marketing. It's cool. You work for Flip My Funnel, which I know Sangram, CMO at Terminus, was here in Toronto a few weeks ago to do a talk at a conference. I'm curious what you thought about account-based marketing. And you know, when or what type of companies you see should use ABM as part of their demand gen strategy?
Yeah, you know, I used to be a client of Terminus when I was at Arc, and I will never forget Sangram pitching us in our office, and that was a long time ago. That was before I joined, obviously, but it's cool to kind of see the company grow and just evolve, but. Okay, so ABM. I am a huge believer in ABM. I think, like any strategy, it's all about the context and the execution. And account-based marketing makes a ton of sense for companies that you might be small business or you might be mid-market, and you are trying to, we call it punching up. You're trying to punch up. So you're trying to nail accounts that are in enterprise or just much larger than you. It also makes a ton of sense if you have many decision makers. So if you're really not targeting just like one or two people in a company, but you're actually targeting six, because that's how many people need to make a decision on your product or service, that's when ABM makes also a ton of sense. I think there are other things that will affect success of account-based marketing. So for example, if you have a very long sales cycle, and long is relative, but if you have more than a 2 or 3 month sales cycle, because maybe your price is maybe higher than, I don't know, 15, let's say your average contract value, your ACV is like $15,000 or 15K, ABM might make a lot of sense for you. And then of course, ABM makes the most sense if you have a very limited industry. So for example, let's say you're only targeting people who make turbines. Well, that's like five companies. So I actually don't know that. Don't quote me on that. But those are the spaces where ABM makes a ton of sense. Mm. I think it makes much less sense if you have a much lower ACV or if your MRR is below $500 a month. I also think it makes a lot less sense if you live and breathe off of either freemium or free trials. This is where you'll spend a lot more time trying to nail the account than putting efforts into actual acquisition, which would probably scale a lot faster anyway. That said, it's always give and take, and it's always a test. I know some companies don't run full-scale ABM, but they have a list of 10 to 50 accounts that they know that if they nail, it'll make all future acquisition way easier. And so they kind of run ABM for a little bit of time and then focus on closing those deals and then maybe not investing as much in ABM later. So that works too.
Makes sense. No, I like how you like listed it out. There's a few things like the turbine. I don't know if there's actually five companies, but it makes sense if you're only targeting, your target is only very limited. I am about to wrap up. I only asked for half an hour of your time. I have two more questions. I love asking these questions, particularly for people who are trying to get into marketing or who's just graduating right now. I'm curious what your advice is for people who are trying to get into marketing. Like, you know, you've had an awesome career path so far. What would be your advice to them?
Devour everything. There is so much, there's so much free knowledge out there. And right. I think probably the most intimidating thing is how much there is out there. But if you can understand the landscape, and if you can also understand really the many different types of marketing and the many different sub functions, if you will, that alone will do two things. One, it'll give you a much better idea of what you actually want to do inside of marketing and what's so interesting about it to you. And I think the second thing is it gives you a much more specific talk track whenever you start interviewing or mm-hmm. having these conversations with other people. Not many people know this, but I'm actually not a marketer by trade. My degree was in art. It was in oil painting. I got an art degree. and of course I fell into technology. So art and science, and then even more specifically marketing, which to me is the combination of both. But when I first started, it was just devour all the information.
Interesting. Awesome. That's so good. Really great tips. And I love that word devour. You're just speaking in a different way right now, and I'm just going to steal that from you somehow. Use it when I'm giving advice to somebody else. One last question. You know, as marketers, I love asking this question. What is your call to action to my listeners right now? Where do you want them to go? Where can people find Asia? Where can people find Demand Maven? So this is your turn to do any CTAs you want.
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, come at me at Twitter. I am at Asia Matos. And I am obsessed with Twitter. I'm like always on it, which is probably a bad thing. But please, like, let's have a conversation. Let's talk. And then the second thing is my website is demandmaven.io. And there is a newsletter there that you might be interested in. Whenever I publish something, it's usually pretty beefy, but it's always extremely actionable. This includes the website teardowns. And other articles and posts. But if that's your jam, I highly recommend going and converting there. So that's how you get a hold of me.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Asia, for your time. I really appreciate you. Have a good rest of the day. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for listening on this episode. I just want to thank you for staying in there. Like I said, I promise I'm going to have an episode every week from now on, going forward until the next season. If you want a high level outline from this episode, feel free to go to growthmarketing.today/033. Now, I'm actually looking for more guests. If you're a marketer or you have any stories about marketing, feel free to reach out at me at ramley@growthmarketing.today, and maybe we can get you as a guest on this podcast. Other than that, I'll see you in the next episode, and don't forget, keep on growing. Passion. 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 Passion.